Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. We've got another special COVID-19 update with Dr. Joe Holly. Just kind of giving you guys quick updates as we get them in the midst of our regular shows. And so I'm going to go ahead. Sam's not available right now, so we're just going to jump in. And Joe, why don't you fill us in with what you have for tonight?
Well, I'll be glad to, Jamie. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the, COVID center of the universe, as far as I can tell. I wanted to just spend a little bit of time tonight talking to you about sort of latest thinking on the approach to patients with COVID-19. Certainly in my area, we're still in the ramp-up period and haven't hit our peak. That's probably due in another week or two. But we are learning from those that are further down the road from us. And I think that the primary message tonight related specifically to taking care of patients who present with COVID-19 and the significant respiratory related illness that it appears to be is don't treat the numbers. And by that, I mean, it's very clear that these patients have an underlying hypoxemia that is part of this disease process, and that they that may well explain some of their significant lethargy and some of the more malaise and generic sort of symptomatology that we're seeing with this disease process. But I think one of the things that seems to happen is that these patients seem to be pretty alert, pretty functional, appear to be oxygenating well, and then you obtain a pulse ox on them, and it's actually quite low, in the 70s or 80s even. Experience so far has basically sort of said that we need to be careful not to be chasing the numbers on these folks, meaning just because their hypoxemia, their pulse ox is in the 80s doesn't mean that we need to get super aggressive about managing them. So the current approach here really is related to initiating oxygen by nasal cannula and pushing that to, 6 liters or so before you switch over to perhaps a non-rebreather mask. Ideally, the non-rebreather mask ought to be covered in some sort of virally impenetrable additional mask on top of that. And then perhaps limited use of CPAP, primarily in the hospital setting. There are real issues associated with using CPAP in the pre-hospital setting. We'll talk about those in just a minute. But if we do end up using CPAP on these patients, it appears that we need to not get our CPAP pressures higher than about 12 centimeters of water. And then obviously if they still, their disease process continues to progress, we would consider endotracheal intubation on those. But in general, what we're finding is that these patients are tolerating actually pretty well hypoxic or pulse oximetry readings in the 70s and 80s. And that if they're doing okay, the point is kind of let them do okay. If we do end up needing to intubate these patients and put them on ventilators, the issue that seems important is that recruitment maneuvers, the sort of ARDS approach of using low tidal volumes and then attempting to recruit additional alveoli, may actually be the wrong way to go. This disease appears to be more related to oxygenation and oxygen carrying capacity than it does to ARDS and a pure pulmonary problem. And in fact, it looks an awful lot like high altitude pulmonary edema or mountain sickness in a lot of ways. The approach really is to focus on the oxygen carrying capacity. The virus appears to have some direct impact on hemoglobin. That's thought to be one of the reasons that hydroxychloroquine may have some value in the treatment of this disease, because it has some effect on how the hemoglobin molecule, the B chain primarily, is affected. But in reality, you need to start that hydroxychloroquine fairly early, and you need to be quite careful. Patients that have G6PD deficiency, an inborn metabolic error, can really get in trouble on hydroxychloroquine, and you certainly need an EKG and then monitoring to make certain the drug levels are appropriate and all that sort of stuff. Shifting gears just a little bit, I wanted to spend time talking a little bit more about the CPAP component and some, I think, confusing information that's coming out related to sort of best practices for airway management in COVID-positive patients in respiratory distress. And the initial recommendation was to move away from endotracheal intubation and to use a supraglottic airway. The thinking behind that was really related to an attempt to get the medic out of the patient's face when they are exhaling, particularly when you put a tube in there and then, you know, that geyser is pointed right at your face. The viral load in sputum is maybe the highest in the body. So that's why they are, you know, so highly infectious from a respiratory standpoint. So the idea is to utilize supraglottic airways that you can put in from a distance. You don't have to have your face quite as in the patient's face while you're doing that. There has been, though, some recommendations more recently that endotracheal intubation may allow for a better way to isolate the patient's airway and contain the virus. But there's a caveat with that, and the caveat is that you obtain the endotracheal intubation using RSI so that the patient is paralyzed, not breathing or coughing, not moving air to be blowing viral particles into your face while you are performing this endotracheal intubation. And then once the tube is in place, obviously getting the balloon inflated, getting the circuitry connected, and making certain that you have a virus impermeable filter on the exhaust port of the BVM vent or whatever you're using there. So I thought that that was important to clear up because the recommendation sounds somewhat confusing, but as is usually the case, the devil's in the details. I'll throw one other little two other little interesting caveats out. It is being noted in some cities that are further ahead of us, for example, New Orleans, New York and others, that their incidence of suicide is increasing. And I don't think we need to spend a lot of time talking about why, other than to say that the times are incredibly stressful right now. Loved ones are sick, et cetera. Everything is disrupted, supply chains, support systems, et cetera. And we need to be paying particular attention to the mental health of folks during this particular time, and particularly our own mental and physical health. One final note is just related to PPE. I know everyone is struggling to get PPE. There's been some pretty good information, although sort of untested, but seems to be working fairly well, and that is taking N95 masks, placing them in a like a food service cart, something that can generate heat, much like a small oven of some sort, and setting the temperature to 155 to about 160, from 155 to about 175, basically just leaving the mask in there for about 30 minutes. That does a good job in sterilizing the masks. That can be done up to about five times, and the masks seem to hold up fairly well, and that will allow reuse of a mask and have it sterilized between uses. It is recommended that you put a water source in there of some sort, just a cup with some water in it, so the air doesn't dry out too much while you're doing that. But that may be a way that we can help extend the life of some very hard-to-find N95 masks and be able to keep those things in service a bit longer. Jamie, that's kind of all I got tonight. Happy to answer any questions, and we'll go from there.
No, I just it's the first I've heard about the virus attacking oxygen carrying capacity, and that actually makes a lot of sense considering the way that they seem to be responding to some of the standard ventilator treatments and things that are going on. If that's the case, it would make sense to me that that's why people are having such a hard time coming off the vent.
Yeah, I think that may be part of it. You know, there's been a lot of positioning being done with prone position and that sort of stuff. It seems actually that heads up may be beneficial, raising the patient's head and thorax up about 30 degrees early on, especially before you get to the point of mechanical ventilation, may be beneficial as well. That kind of fits a little bit into the high altitude pulmonary edema kind of picture. I do think we need to be careful not to overutilize pressure on these patients and not to underutilize tidal volume. It actually appears tidal volume is around 10 cc per kilo are better than the ARDS approach of low tidal volumes like 6 cc's per kilo.
Well, Joe, that's really great to keep this information coming, and we thank you for taking time out of your super busy schedule to just share these updates as they come in. One of the things that's, I think, so devastating about this virus and hard for the lay public to understand is how little we really know about how this virus works. And so all this information is just adding to our understanding of how to help these patients.
Well, I hope so. It is a learning in progress for sure, and we're working our way through as much of this stuff as we can. You know, everybody just needs to stay safe, take care of themselves, protect yourselves, and protect your patients.
All right, Joe, I'll let you go. Thank you very much for getting with us tonight, and please stay safe and take care of yourself.
Thanks, guys. Look forward to talking to you soon.